It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
It began long ago. Two young boys in an American town riding their bikes to school and little league practice. Over the years, the boys became fast friends, united in their love for stories where things would go horribly wrong. Pour yourself a strong beverage and buckle up. You're in the Shallow End with Schnebly and Toth.
It's episode 79.
What?
Of the Shallow End with Schnebly and Toth. A little bit of background. The story that I am going to tell today, and I don't even know who's going first, is not the story that I had originally planned.
Uh-huh.
And I sent the story that I was going to tell to JG and said, what do you think of this? Because I was on the fence. And JG agreed, yeah, probably. Well, he didn't agree. He actually said, I don't think this is the best idea. And I was on the fence about it. And so rather than tell a bad story, I'm just going to say to people, wear your damn seatbelts.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. It was not a bad story.
It didn't end well. And it was irony, but it wasn't entertaining.
That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah, his demise was ironic, but yeah.
It was a story about a guy who was very anti seatbelt, didn't think the government should be able to tell us to wear seatbelts in cars, and he ended up dying in a car accident.
He wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Yeah.
So I found a much funnier story instead.
I'm looking forward to hearing
it. By the way,
it.
Did you know that 15,000 people in America die every year from not wearing seatbelts?
I did not know that.
15,000. Yeah. That's a lot of funerals and preventable. So, damn it, people, wear your seatbelt. We don't ask a lot of you other than to subscribe and give us a 5-star review and tell your friends, but we're going to add to that and wear your damn seatbelt.
Yes, please. Would you like to go first, Linz?
Well, since I've already talked so much, maybe I should just jump in to the story.
I'm listening.
The only unfortunate thing here, JG, is that I do not have the name of the guy involved in this story because he was a patient at a hospital for reasons that will become clear.
Okay.
So in order to tell the story, I've come up with a nickname for him,
okay,
which is Drunky Fight Guy.
I think we all know Drunky Fight Guy.
Drunky Fight Guy. Some people call him DFG, but I prefer Drunky Fight Guy.
Get down with DFG.
All we know is that he's 35 years old, and the story takes place in a city in north central Vietnam called Dong Hoi. And that's actually on the ocean. It's kind of a coastal area. And judging by the map, it looks like it would be a very pretty pretty place to live. So the tale of Drunky Fight Guy actually starts months ago. In fact, it was in the summer. It was five months ago. And we do know, even though we don't know his name, that Drunky Fight Guy liked to get his drink on. He loved him some bars and some music. And after a couple of cocktails, you know, what are you looking at? And he would sometimes end up in fist fights after a night of drinking. And I'm guessing because it was summertime, it was maybe a little warm and he'd had a few too many cold ones, whatever that was. But we do know that that fight that he got into last summer was severe enough that he ended up being taken to the ER.
Wow.
So he's injured. He's taken to the hospital and they examine him. But what's interesting is that they couldn't find anything wrong with him. nothing out of the ordinary. And he explains, yeah, I got in this fight and, you know, we were punching each other in the head. And so the doctor essentially says, well, yeah, you got punched in the head, so your head's going to hurt for a while. If I were you, I would take some aspirin and quit fighting people. And by the way, wear your seatbelt, he probably added.
And please subscribe and give us a 5-star review.
and give that Shallow End podcast in the United States a positive review. But we're guessing that the doctor said all of that in Vietnamese because, you know, it was in
Dong Ho
stuff. Yeah.
Which I love that name. Dong Ho.
I do too. It actually reminds me of the original Hawaii 5-0. Remember Cam Fong as Chin Ho.
Yeah, Chin Ho. That was it. Yeah.
That was always my favorite character name. Cam Fong as Chin Ho. And I remember thinking, you really had to change that name to make it sound more.
Cam Fong is better. I like Cam Fong.
Cam Fong doesn't work, but Chin Ho. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, this brings us actually to just a few weeks ago, and Drunky Fight Guy had been struggling for weeks with some weird symptoms. And I should probably say that this is just short of, if not actually on the line of being a trigger warning.
Okay.
Because these symptoms are kind of grim. It's not just the severe headaches. That was bad enough. These were awful. Awful headaches. But what's more, after a while, this guy actually had fluid buildup and discharge from both his nose and his eyes.
Ooh.
And he's even at times experiencing loss of vision. I mean, he would temporarily go almost blind. Mm. So just last week, Drunky Fight Guy... I wish I knew how to say that. I should have at least researched how to say that in Vietnamese to give it more authenticity.
Sure.
Drunky Fight Guy has his family take him to a hospital in Dong Hoi called the Cuba Friendship Hospital, which I think is a cool name. And there, the doctors do CT scans, and they reveal that this man, Drunky Fight Guy, is suffering from tension pneumocephalus, which, you know, what the hell is that?
It doesn't sound good.
It doesn't. I would rather have a doctor say, you just have a cold, you know, aspirin and Sucrets, mm-hmm. But tension pneumocephalus, they think, yeah, I don't know. Well, I looked it up and it is a thankfully rare, but it's a potentially life-threatening neurological condition, and it's defined by a dangerous increase in what they call intracranial pressure,
okay,
which is the pressure of your brain essentially swelling against, as I understand it, your skull.
Gotcha.
Which is not good. No. It's just, again, you know, aspirin and Sucrets ain't gonna
no.
fix that. So, as I said, they order these CT scans, they come back, and they've diagnosed the condition, this tension pneumocephalus, but they're flummoxed when they're staring at these CT scans. And you can picture this, these doctors staring at these scans that have come back and then actually looking at each other and as if to say, do you see what I see here? Am I, you know, kind of rubbing their eyes like, is that really what's there?
How do you say flummoxed in Vietnamese?
I should have looked up that and Drunky Fight Guy. I am clearly ill prepared to do this podcast, and my apologies for not doing a better job, because that would have been a great word to pull out of the air. Anyway, suddenly all his symptoms make sense. And here's the real trigger alert, because the unusual source of Drunky Fight Guy's symptoms running up his nose and into his brain is a pair of So not just one, but two chopsticks.
Ah!
Chopsticks in his brain.
Oh, my God.
What the H, right?
Now, was it one up each nostril or two in one?
I couldn't quite tell from the CT scan. We might end up putting it in the page so that people can see this. But the doctor, who's the head of neurosurgery at Cuba Friendship Hospital, put it in a very understated way. He said, and I quote, "This is very rare."
Yeah.
And I think we should be glad for that, right?
Certainly am.
And now he says that Drunky Fight Guy is equally confused by this.
He doesn't remember how the chopsticks got in his brain.
Up his nose and into his brain. And the doctors say, well, do you remember any kind of interaction with anybody? Like maybe a disgruntled diner, something.
Yeah.
You know, anything at all unusual? And at first he's thinking about it and he can't figure out how these eating utensils ended up in his brain. And he says, again in Vietnamese, I don't know, beats me. But then he thinks back to the summertime and that barroom brawl that he'd been involved in 5 full months before.
No.
When he got fist slinging drunk and ended up fighting some stranger. Now he says to the doctors he didn't remember any details from that brawl, but apparently that night he had said to police, quote, "Someone stabbed me in the face with an unknown object."
Okay.
So
okay.
He remembered being stabbed in the face, but he didn't remember with what. He didn't remember anything really other than, yeah, I think I got stabbed in the face that night 5 months ago. The weird part is when he reported to the hospital that night, you know, in the summer, the night of that fight, doctors didn't find anything abnormal. They examined him. They didn't see any chopsticks.
So,
I guess they didn't do a CT scan, yeah. Or they probably would have seen these. Which makes me think that somebody kind of dropped the ball, but
I have to wonder, you know, he remembers being stabbed in the face. So, okay, that explains how the chopsticks got in his nose. But did the perpetrator then proceed to, like, push them up above his nasal line so that... because how?
Maybe that was it.
How?
Maybe the other guy, Drunky Fight Guy's enemy... saw the chopsticks and thought, well, that doesn't look very good. I better force them out of view.
Yes, push them up.
So that, you
yeah.
know,
ugh.
So that people don't realize. Yeah, yeah.
Good Lord. And they were in there for 5 months.
That's what's amazing to me. This guy had been living with these chopsticks up his nose into his brain for 5 months. 150 days.
Oh, man.
Now, thankfully, the doctors were able to remove the chopsticks. They did an endoscopic surgical procedure, and then they did more microsurgery to seal what is called the fistula, which is the connection between the artery and vein in the brain and spinal cord tissue. Oof. So this is, you know, this is serious stuff. This is not outpatient stuff. He is still, as near as I can tell, in the hospital, but expected to make a full recovery.
That's really amazing.
5 months with chopsticks in your brain. And another reason why I always eat my Chinese food with a fork and not chopsticks, because yeah. it's much tougher to not notice a fork in your
That's
brain,
right.
at least to me.
Especially if somebody tries to jam it handle in, you know, you've got the little
right.
prongs sticking out, and that's a telltale sign to any medical professional.
You don't even need a CT scan to
no,
say,
there's...
hey, I think you've got a fork in your nose.
You've got cutlery in your nasal passage.
Those Wiley chopsticks are, you
yeah.
know, they're slippery. They'll disappear on you. Can't trust
Good
them.
Lord.
So kids, no fighting, no chopsticks up your opponent's nose, and again, wear your damn seatbelt.
And subscribe and give us a five-star rating.
Give us a five-star rating and positive just review. Pandering. Got this from the New York Post and Metro.uk. Chopsticks up the nose.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
For years, he's been one of America's premier storytellers on NBC News. His signature voice on Dateline, reporting stories of strange events and horrific crimes, has made him a living legend. Now, for the first time ever, you can enjoy Keith Morrison's spoken word Christmas songs, told by the man himself, and delivered with intriguing twists and turns as only Keith can deliver them.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Or is he? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. But what do we really know about Rudolph before he joined up with Santa? I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning. But do we know what was aboard those ships? And who was really at the wheel? And why only three ships? Were there more than we thought?
Your favorite seasonal songs retold in a whole new way, just in time for the holidays.
I saw Mommy kissing Santa Claus. But oh, that was much more than just a kiss.
Keith Morrison's spoken word Christmas songs, available on CD and download.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. At least, that's what it appeared to be at first.
Keith Morrison's spoken word Christmas songs. Celebrity voice impersonated?
Our email address is lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com. And if memory serves, JG, it's been that way since episode one.
Since the core of the earth was molten lava. Wait, no, and it still is, isn't it? Never mind.
Maybe since dinosaurs roamed the planet.
That's right. Yeah.
That would have been cool if we would have gotten email from dinosaurs, wouldn't it? I'm a T-Rex. Just want to let you know how much I enjoyed your show.
How would they type? I mean, a T-Rex, sure, because they've got the little claws, but a brontosaurus, would he have to use?
I was just going to say brontosaurus.
Like speech to text, probably.
Yeah.
Would be the only way.
Maybe type with his nose. Although that would hit probably too many keys.
Cat's like, you're talking about T-Rex? She comes thundering up the stairs.
She loves her some T-Rex.
We're speculating on how dinosaurs would send emails.
She doesn't have any insight. Okay. This comes to us from a listener named Peg. I love that name, Peg, because it always makes me think of Steely Dan.
Makes me think of pirates.
That makes total sense. Peg writes, Kat, Jethro, and Lindsay, I love, love, love Box of Oddities and now The Shallow End. I've had at least one boo effect, but didn't want to swim back through 500 plus episodes to find the associated one. Your stories and comments make me laugh. Sometimes they make me say, me too, or exactly. Such as your recent explanation of using plastic bread bags over your feet when putting on boots.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if people remember this. This was JG explaining how, as a kid growing up in Maine, you would do that in the mudroom.
Yeah, well, it was called
of your school,
the cloak room, because it was like this Victorian era, almost like Dickensian type of building. You expected to see street urchins outside begging for money.
Right.
And yeah, they called the room where we left our jackets and our boots the cloak room. Still, even though no one had worn a cloak for a century.
Or so. Yeah. So Peg totally relates to the bread bags over the feet when putting on boots. Then she adds, Jethro Gilligan Toth, I love your name, and it makes me think your parents must have loved those 1960s TV shows like Beverly Hillbillies and Gilligan's Island, which was my personal favorite. I would love to hear the story of how you were gifted with your name. Thanks, Peg.
I just woke up and a nurse was taking care of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure the decision-making process there. But yes, my parents were big Sherwood Schwartz fans.
I remember your story, speaking of Gilligan, about meeting Bob Denver when you were in Phoenix.
Which version? Because...
I think I heard the version that wasn't necessarily ready for air.
Yeah, Bob Denver. I'll just talk about this little part. Bob Denver was living in Vegas at the time. Of course, Bob Denver played Gilligan on Gilligan's Island, and radio station I worked for in Phoenix was hosting the world's largest indoor beach party, where they trucked in truck after truck of sand and dumped it on the dance room floor. And so we hired Bob Denver to come down and host it. And he was, as I said, in Vegas. And so it's a short flight to Phoenix. And so he just wore his Gilligan outfit on the plane to the event, which would have alarmed me if I was a co-passenger. First of all, I look over.
Hell yes.
And there's Gilligan. Is this flight going to end well? Or am I going to be trapped on an island making radios out of coconuts?
How many cocktails have I had? Because I swear Gilligan just got on my plane.
So we pick him up at a limo, and he does the event, and his return flight doesn't leave for a few hours. And so he's like, well, what can we do? And we said, well, we've got a limo. Let's drive you around and we'll have a couple of beers. And yeah, I had a beer with Gilligan, and show you the city. And so we get to Camelback Mountain, which has this beautiful view of the Phoenix Valley. The Valley of the Sun.
Very iconic.
It is. And we're standing up there, and it's like a rest stop area kind of thing. And Bob Denver says, I got to pee. And so he goes over on the other side of the limo, and he's peeing.
Doing his business.
Peeing off the edge of the cliff. And just as we did that, some park authority people, security people, pull in and get out, and are really upset that there's somebody urinating off the side of the cliff, but were shocked to find out it was Gilligan, still wearing his hat.
Yeah.
He had his red shirt on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a story, I'm sure, that they told their kids.
And I'm guessing they didn't write him a citation.
They thought it was hilarious.
It's Gilligan.
Yeah, they posed for photos with him pretending to pee.
I hope he zipped up before they took the photos.
Yeah, he did. I'm pretty sure. Although I can't say for certain.
Bob Denver was smart that way. JG, I am so jazzed to talk about Wild Grain. Tonight, I am very excited because Nancy and I are grilling steaks and having some delicious Wild Grain Sourdough Bread.
Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries.
And unlike typical supermarket bread, Wild Grain uses this really cool slow fermentation process that's easier on your belly, it's lower in sugar, and it's rich in nutrients and antioxidants.
And there's constantly new stuff being added, new seasonal and limited time special items to try.
One of the many cool things about Wild Grain, every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less. That's fast.
All you have to do is sign up at wildgrain.com/TSE and choose which type of box you want to receive and how often. It's easy to reschedule. You can skip or you can cancel. It's just a very, very simple yet delicious process.
Like JG said, wildgrain.com/TSE. Choose which type of box you want to receive, how often. It's easy to reschedule, skip, or cancel.
Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off your first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/TSE to start your subscription.
He's telling the truth. You heard him right. Free croissants in every box, $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/TSE.
That's wildgrain.com/TSE, or you can choose promo code TSE at checkout.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory, and was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mischief Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
This is your friendly lifeguard with a public service announcement.
Stay out of the fucking deep end.
You're in the shallow end with Schnepley and Toth.
Tell me a story, my friend.
Right. It was in January of 2021 that this happened. Once upon a time in a quiet, unassuming Oxford neighborhood of Botley, where most of the excitement you'd usually get would be maybe a heated debate over the best way to prune your rose bushes, a guy named Frank Cordy. He was a 72-year-old man, twinkle in his eye, found himself in a bit of a pickle. Okay. It was a morning like any other. The birds were chirping, the English sky a standard shade of gray, and Frank probably contemplating whether to have toast or crumpets for breakfast.
Sure.
Gregory McCallium, who was a local bartender with a taste for trouble, and as it turns out, a rather poor understanding of his neighborhood's demographic, decided to add a bit of, quote, excitement to Frank's day.
Okay.
So Gregory, who lived nearby, had been throwing what we in the biz call a rager the night before. Or in Maine, we would call it a rager.
A rager.
A rager. Bobby, stop throwing rages. To quote JFK.
Yeah. Looks flush to me.
Looks flush to me. Bobby, get me some more chowder. Anyway, the night before, he'd had this huge party, and it was very, very loud. And somebody had called the cops on him, and they'd shut the party down. So Gregory believed our guy Frank was the snitch. And Gregory did what any self-respecting villain in a poorly written crime drama would do. He concocted a plan of revenge.
Of course he did.
A plan that would have him breaking into Frank's house that very morning.
Uh-oh.
To confront him over calling the cops. So Gregory, our misguided marauder, after being shut down by the cops for noise pollution, waited until the next morning. Pegs Frank, his senior citizen neighbor, as the party pooper, and fueled by what we can only assume was a potential cocktail of pride and party leftovers, Gregory decides to do his best impression of a B-grade action movie villain. So he chooses, of course, broad daylight for his sinister sequel because, well...
No sense doing that under cover of darkness.
No, I want everybody to see me. So he breaks in at 8 a.m. Maybe he believed the early bird catches the worm, or in this case, the early bird assaults a little old man and his wife. I'm not sure.
Or maybe Frank would still be asleep.
Yeah, maybe.
He'd have the element of surprise.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Now, Frank, whose idea of an early morning surprise is finding his favorite slippers warm by the radiator, was about to redefine the term wake-up call for him. As Gregory sneaks in, armed with what was described later as a six-bladed knuckle duster.
Holy cow.
Because apparently when you go to intimidate a septuagenarian, you go big or you go home.
Exactly, yeah.
But he didn't realize, Gregory that is, the intruder, what a huge mistake he had just made. Because our bartender bandit, he makes his presence known with all the subtlety of a bull in a china shop. The commotion draws Frank downstairs, where he's greeted not by the usual British politeness from a neighbor, but a knife-wielding wannabe tough guy.
Sure.
And a scuffle ensued. But here's the thing our intruder didn't know about his feeble senior citizen neighbor. Frank was a former junior boxing champion, and still a bit handy with his fists.
Good for Frank.
So the intruder lunged at Frank with his knife. Frank dodged the slash and delivered not one, but two thunderous right hooks to Gregory's head, who by now was probably regretting a lot of his life choices.
Go, Frank!
Frank's fists, still bound by muscle memory of his youth, dropped Gregory like a sack of turnips. And then left him looking like he had gone 10 rounds with a Mack truck.
Oh, I love Frank.
I'm sure the word rematch probably was permanently struck from Gregory's vocabulary. The court would later hear all of the details, where the Honorable Judge Angela Morris basically tells Gregory he's lucky Frank didn't go full Rocky on him. In an article in the Daily Mail, the transcript of Frank's testimony in court records reads like this. Mr. Cordy, the accused produced a knife. It was no ordinary knife. It was more like a six-bladed knuckle buster. He made a slashing movement at me. I stepped back. He missed me, fortunately. When McCallum was off balance, I grabbed both of his wrists and managed to pin him against the wall. I demanded he drop his knife, but he wouldn't. I shouted to my wife to ring the police. I was absolutely terrified. As I saw it, it was a matter of do or die, so I let his wrists go. Fortunately, the element of surprise was with me, so I adjusted my position, and I let him have it with my right hand. It was just below the eye. I didn't knock him out, but he was stunned. I heard the knife clatter to the floor. We grappled. I was trying to drag him out the back door. We both fell to the floor. I had to subdue him by punching him again, which I did not take a great deal of pleasure in.
How very British. Don't wish to be rude about punching the man, but he did start things, didn't he?
He did. So the jury hears this story, and the Gregory's defense... amnesia. I don't remember doing that. But of course, no one is buying what he's selling, especially not when you look at his face. It shows like, you know, he just came out of a car crash.
Right.
You ought to see his mugshot. I'll show it to you.
Oh, I bet. I'd love to see
it. In the blue corner, weighing in a lifetime of wisdom and right hooks that should be considered a national treasure, Frank stands vindicated. The jury's verdict: Gregory's taking a timeout in the clink for a solid 4.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Frank's just worried about what's for dinner and whether he'll have time for a quick nap before Antique Roadshow is on.
4.5 years.
He got 4.5. And so Gregory acquaints himself with his new, less than cozy accommodations, and Frank and his wife, Margaret, can finally enjoy some peace and quiet. Well, until the next foolhardy soul decides to test the theory that age is just a number. Spoiler alert, it's a number that packs a punch in this case.
Yeah, yeah. Best not to settle your differences with your fists.
Yeah.
Or your pointy knives breaking into your neighbor's house.
In the words of Frank, who has probably become Botley's most unexpected celebrity, if he had to, he'd do it all over again. And who can blame
Damn
him,
right
really?
He would.
I mean, if somebody...
Damn right he would.
I love it when people think they're going to take advantage of a senior citizen, and then they just get the snot knocked out of them.
My guess is Frank will not have to buy a pint of ale for the rest of his life, because every time he walks into a bar, I know if I were in a pub and he walks in, I am so buying that guy a pint.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're his neighbor and you know the guy and you know the jerk that tried to assault him. That guy was probably not very popular with his neighbors. But, you know, when you're a guy like Frank, you spent a lifetime learning how to dance the sweet science, and you don't hang your gloves up just because the calendar's a bit full. Let's raise a pint to Frank, who taught us
God bless
you
Frank.
You can't judge a book by its cover, especially if that book is a leather-bound, fist-throwing tome of Don't Mess With Me.
Frank is my new favorite Brit.
The moral of the story, never underestimate a man who can throw a punch, and was known one time as Frank the Fist. It's just not wise.
Yeah, yeah. Good for Frank. Great story.
And so that puts a wrap on this round. That wraps up this round of when burglars bite off more than they can chew. My source information, the Daily Mail, the New York Daily News, and the Guardian. Frank the Fist. I love that name.
Give it up for Frank the Fist. Yeah. Now I hear the theme from Rocky in my head.
I'm looking at his boxing picture, and it looks like probably it was like in the 50s or something, you know, when he was at his at his peak. But he was a junior boxing champ. And then you've got the picture of Gregory. Let me show you this picture, Linz. So, yeah, check. I love this photo because it's the perpetrator's mugshot next to a picture of Frank superimposed. It's this dear little sweet old man just kicked the crap out of this kid.
God bless Frank. Man, that kid had it coming.
Boy, he did.
That and 4.5 years. Good for them. Good for them. Good for the court.
We always love hearing from you guys. Lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com. That is and has been for quite some time and will continue to be, hopefully, for quite some time.
All the way back to the dinosaurs.
Ever since the Mesozoic era.
Which is odd that you think that we've only done 79 episodes. I mean, if you stretch that all the way back to the Mesozoic era, that's not very much.
200 million years, and it took us 79. It took us 200 million years to do 79 episodes. Are we a couple of slackers or what?
Maybe we're just very particular.
Maybe that's it. Maybe
about exactly what we put out. It has to be just right before we record the next one.
We're all about the quality control.
Absolutely.
Hey, we'll see you next time, and continue to make good choices.
Your life, your chopsticks, your boxing gloves might depend on it.
So concludes another episode of The Shallow End with Schnepley and Toff. We thank you for listening. Oh, be a dear, would you? Please subscribe to this podcast, give these boys a 5-star rating, and think of something nice to say, even if you have to make something up. And visit us online at shallowendpodcast.com. Okay, gotta go.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more, and they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, Stakuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.